What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 290 on this Monday, August 17th, 2026. Josh Calloway, Tom Green here with you. 18 days until kickoff. We're into the teens now. We are getting really close. Fall camp rolling on. Oklahoma had their first scrimmage of fall camp on Saturday. Tom and I will get into some of the news and notes coming out of that. We'll also continue our position preview series today, defensive ends and linebackers. We've got the preseason AP poll. We also got a big hoops transfer last week. A lot going on, a lot to talk about. It's a packed Monday show, and you can be with us every single day over at Sooners Illustrated. Use the promo code that's on your screen in the bottom corner of the right beneath Tom. Sooners60. That'll get you a 60% discount to Sooners Illustrated, the entire 24/7 Sports Network. Be sure to be with Tom, myself, Brody Lusk, and all, of course, the great Sooners Illustrated members every single day for content, updates, conversation with other fans every day at Sooners Illustrated. And again, access to the full 24/7 Sports Network as well. Great time for it as we're getting close, real close to football. The season now under 3 weeks away. All right, without further ado, let's dive in. Plenty to talk about, plenty going on. Like I said, fall first scrimmage was on Saturday. We'll get into that. Obviously, some of the news and notes coming out of that. And we also got the preseason AP poll, that sort of thing. But I want to first start with our position preview series. We've done six positions, four to go. We'll do two more today, two more next week to wrap it up. Let's do the defensive ends up first, Tom. We did defensive tackles last week. We kick it outside. Defensive tackle was really high for us. We both went 9.5 in our confidence rating. Got to figure defensive end is going to be pretty high too. Miguel Chavis has done a phenomenal job here, right, building up the depth of it year after year, developing guys, producing high-end talent season after season. And it feels like another really good room on paper. Taylor Wine, obviously the headliner, had that breakout season last year. Danny Okoye, you know, turning a lot of heads in fall camp. Everyone's excited for PJ Adeboye, what he can do, obviously, in year four. And then a lot of young talent that pretty unproven, but very exciting about the potential there. Tom, it feels like defensive end's in really good shape. You need a couple of guys to step up, but you feel pretty good about it, especially considering that you have Taylor Wine at the top of it, who you feel as much of a sure thing as probably anyone on this entire roster heading into the season.
Yeah, I don't know if there could be many other teams in the country that could effectively lose two starters, one of which is an All-American in our Mason Thomas, and the other one, Marvin Jones Jr., who's, you know, very productive and really solid player for them last year, and still feel as good as Oklahoma should feel about that position group heading into a season. Obviously, a huge part of that is the breakout that Taylor Wine had last season. You know, I think he started about like half the games. Really took off after R. Mason went down with that quad injury. But, you know, just having him as the, you know, the leader, not just of that room, but really the defensive line, like he's setting the tone for the defensive line to come back and build off of what he was able to accomplish last year. And then, you know, you have that really intriguing battle between, you know, PJ Adeboye and Danny Okoye for that other starting job. And I think no matter who emerges there ultimately as a starter, like both those guys are going to play huge roles on this team. Right. And I think you're going to feel really good about them because, you know, by all indications from everything we've heard, not just since the spring, but in fall camp too, is that both those guys have really taken a leap. Like PJ didn't go through spring. You know, he had the, foot procedure after the season that kept him sidelined, but you know, he's back now and he's kind of picked up where he left off coming off a career year. And the thing with PJ is just so interesting to me because obviously he's a former five-star guy. He's a guy that came in with, you know, these huge expectations, but, you know, everybody develops at their own pace and, you know, he hasn't been a bust by any means. He had a really solid year last year, but he's heading into year four and he hasn't started a game.
Right.
He's just kind of been a pretty good contributor. He's dealt with a lot of, you know, minor injuries that he's just played through these last few years. But if he can stay healthy and just build off of what we've heard and seen throughout fall camp, I think they're going to feel really good about him. And then obviously Danny Okoye, a guy that everybody just kind of expects to make that year three leap that, you know, R. Mason did, that Taylor Wine did. And it was really interesting when we spoke to him last week, just listening to him talk about, you know, kind of with the hindsight of 2 years, it's like, yeah, I wasn't a very coachable player. know, I struggled to adjust coming from homeschool and then dealing with authority at OU, and, you know, just his relationship with Miguel Chavis. Obviously, they were really close during his recruitment, but, you know, once you start getting coached by the guy that is, you know, critiquing you while helping you grow, there's an adjustment there. And he seems to really just kind of shifted his perspective, and that has helped, you know, turn him into a guy who was a rotational piece for them last year and a guy that they think is going to be a really key part of this line this year.
Yeah, glad you brought up Danny's interview on Friday. It's on the YouTube channel. You can watch it. Really good. Like you said, the fact that even the ability and the willingness to admit that you were immature a couple years ago obviously shows a sign of a lot of growth. And obviously Danny, you know, he's always been a big personality, and we always knew the potential with just the raw ability. But like you said, a bit of an unorthodox path coming from, you know, homeschool team, obviously up in Tulsa area. And, you know, it's just going to be fun to watch him get out there and get turned loose a little bit more this year. I mean, he obviously had a role last year, but you're expecting kind of the world this time around. And just, yeah, him being very open and willing to kind of be like, yeah, a couple years ago, I probably need to grow up a little bit. And, you know, he went about 10 solid minutes that I got, and I could have easily – it went – I mean, I wanted to stick around. Brent Reynolds came out, so I had to kind of dip. But he was really good on Friday. He's come a long way from that standpoint. And it feels like he is putting it together. He's having a great camp. We'll talk about the scrimmage obviously later, but was good in the scrimmage. Like, it's a guy who's going to play. And that's – you said it. Like, him and PJ, it's a fun battle. We've talked about it. It's fun to kind of see who's – at the end of the day, they're both going to play. They're both going to play. They're both going to play a lot. And they kind of aren't really – they're pretty different, right? And so that which is kind of a good thing, right? I mean, PJ, we've kind of talked about it last year. Like, the numbers don't blow you away last year. I think he had like 17 total tackles, but he clogs things up, and he's good against the run. And Danny Okoye is more that pure, like, pass rusher, tackles can't
violent,
too fast. Like, they're pretty different guys, and that's a good thing. I mean, so they're both going to play a lot, and it's, you feel really good about it. Because Taylor Wine, I said a minute ago, as much of a sure thing as there is. I mean, if he remains healthy, he's going to have a great year. He was awesome. You know, I was watching, it was just on SEC Network last night. I caught like a little chunk of it in the middle, the Alabama game in Tuscaloosa last year, where it's like Taylor Wine's blocking a field goal and he's getting the strip sack. And it's like, this guy is just everywhere. He's just an, and that's when R. Mason Thomas was out, right? And so, you know, that Wine can be that top end defensive edge rusher in the SEC. Like, we saw it. And so, you know, another year for him, you know that he's going to have a great season. And I asked Danny about Taylor stepping up as a leader. He said, as soon as R. Mason left, Taylor stepped right into that. He's embraced it. He was at media days, obviously. Like, he's what you want kind of leading that room. And so the top end of this room, you feel, I think, spectacular about. It's, you need someone else to step up. You need like a fourth and fifth guy to kind of emerge. I think a lot of us have penciled Wyatt Gilmore in to do that, the Minnesota Mauler, as Miguel Chavis calls him. Like, he seems to be the guy perfect fit for that. But there's a ton of other young talent. I mean, we've heard great things about Jay Crail, and like, obviously you have the other young guys like a Matthew Nelson, even like CJ Nixon, you know, year two. Like, there's a lot of other exciting young talent in that room as well. But the top, you know, two, three guys there, you feel as good as you do anywhere on the roster.
Yeah, and you didn't mention Kenny Azuawu
transferring to UTSA. Again, yeah. I'm so guilty that every time I forget about Kenny Azuawu.
Well, he's been like exclusively with the defensive ends in fall camp.
Yeah, he's
now
a defensive end. Yeah, basically.
But I still think he's a guy that, like, in certain packages, if they wanted to, they can shift him inside as a pass rusher. But I'm with you. Like, those top three seem like pretty firmly set of like what it's going to look like in the rotation, and then it feels like they have three other guys that they can kind of just play situationally. With Wyatt Gilmore, Kenny Azuawu, and Jake Krell, just kind of really depending on what the opposing offense are doing and what the situation calls for. And I think having that kind of flexibility is really good. Now I don't know what those guys' snap counts are going to look like, but I feel pretty comfortable saying that, you know, Taylor Wine, PJ, and Danny are going to get the majority of the snaps off the edge there. But you're going to need, you know, another one or two guys to step up and make some plays in their opportunities that they're given.
CJ Nixon's the one really interesting one for me, because I just don't know what to make of him. You know, really highly touted guy. I was an Oklahoma kid from Weatherford. You know, year two for him, Miguel Chavis talked about the media day, like, CJ was a really good basketball player in high school. So, like, he had to really kind of grow his body to be more of a SEC defensive end. It feels like he's gotten a lot closer to that. I don't know if he'll have a big role or not, what kind of snaps, you know, what that'll look like, but he's just a guy who we've heard is kind of putting together a nice camp. Like, he's an interesting piece to me. I'm excited to see if he can work his way in there, into what capacity, and if he can make something of it. Because it does feel like that fourth spot is kind of up for grabs. It's going to be, you know, who's making the most of their opportunities when the games start, and that'll probably produce, you know, who ends up being trusted a little more, you know, in the back half of the year in November. So it'll be interesting to watch for sure. All right, should we go ahead and rate them? Let's do the defensive ends. I can rattle off our ratings real fast. We've done six now. Quarterback, 8 for me, 7.5 for you. Running back, 7 for me, 6 for you. Wide receiver, 7.75 for me, 8 for you. Tight end, 7.5 for me, 9 for you. Offensive line, 8.25 for me, 7.75 for you. And then defensive tackle, we both went with a 9.5. So we both went really high in defensive tackle. Where are you at defensive ends, 1 through 10 confidence rating in Miguel Chavis's group?
I think I'm at an 8.5.
Yeah.
Again, Taylor Wine, like you said, a sure thing. A guy who's, you know, going to have a chance to put together another All-SEC season, maybe be in conversation for All-America honors if everything goes right. And I have confidence that both PJ Adebore and Danny Okoye are going to make that leap. I don't know what that's going to look like in terms of, like, sacks and tackles for loss, but I think that's going to be a very formidable combo to complement Taylor Wine off the other side. I just think it's really solid group, and Miguel Chavis has proven, you know, the last few years that he's capable of getting production out of these guys. Mm-hmm. I don't think it is the strongest position on the defense, like we talked about, you know, last week. Defensive tackle is going to be in that conversation. You know, another position that we're going to talk about, you know, either today or next week might be in that conversation too. But still, 8.5 is, you know, you feel really good about this because, again, like, none of the defensive positions are going to be, like, probably
below. They're all going to be pretty good. Yeah.
They're all going to be pretty good because this is widely expected to be another unit that's going to be, you know, a top 5, top 10 defense in the country. And, you know, if you ask some players, they think it's going to be the best defense in the country. They're going to be able to improve off of some things that they, you know, felt maybe they lacked in a little bit last year, just areas that they think they can be better in. So, yeah, I think I'm locking in with an 8.5 for defensive ends.
Yeah, I'm going to go a little higher than you, but still below defensive tackle. I'm going to go right in between it and 9. I feel really good. The top three, I love. I've been a Okoye fan since they got him out of high school, so we saw Taylor Wine. I mean, we know what he is. And just feels like PJ is in a right place. Hopefully he remains healthy. That's really the only question. You noted that earlier. He's been kind of beat up at times, but if he can remain healthy, he looks just like an alien out there on the practice field. I feel like he's going to have his best year yet. And then I'm just kind of banking on that one of the other guys will step up and have a good year in that fourth spot, whether it is Gilmore or Ozawalu or one of these younger guys, or maybe kind of a, you know, in the aggregate combination of them, whatever it may be. But I like the room a lot. I like the talent. And Miguel Chavis has, you know, won me over. Not that he had to, you know, win my approval by any means, but he's done it every year. You know, every year he's produced talent and developed guys. They clearly have developed. I mean, Taylor Wine was a dude that, you know, couldn't get on that, you know, didn't play as a young dude, you know, wasn't a super highly rated prospect or anything out of high school. And now look at him, he's like an all SEC level defensive end. So you just kind of believe in what they have cooking at that spot, that one of those other dudes, one of them will join that top three and make a really good kind of quartet there. So I like the defensive ends. I'm going to go with a 9. Feel really confident there. Staying on defense, let's go over to Brent Venables' baby, which is the linebacker room. Very interesting room. Very interesting. I'd be curious to know, and we'll never know. We could do the thought exercise if we want. I don't know what good it would do us. What this would look like if Owen Heineke was not back, because obviously we talked about it back in the spring and, you know, before we knew. Not a lot of returning production at linebacker before they got Heineke back. With Heineke back, a very different look. But before that, it was like, whoa, because obviously Cody McKenzie exits, Samuel Masigo exits, you know, through the portal. And you're kind of looking at it like they're going to really need some young guys to step up. And they still need that, but not nearly the same level with having Heineke back in year 5, Cape Lewis back in year 5, who obviously is maybe the face of the program in a lot of ways right now, or certainly one of them, obviously in his 5th year. They bring in Cole Sullivan, who's been one of the MVPs of fall camp. And then it's a bunch of young guys, James Nesta, Marcus James, maybe even, you know, like, you know, Dane Bathurst could maybe get in the mix in some capacity. Christian Moore has been injured, so I don't know how realistic that is. But, Tom, obviously at linebacker, the top line, you feel amazing I mean, Heinicke Kipp is as good. You feel fantastic about that. And honestly, like we said, Cole Sullivan's had an awesome fall. But a lot of young dudes who have not played really much at all at this level yet. Where are you at linebacker-wise? It's a very interesting group and one that, you know, again, you feel really good about the top line. But when they rotate other dudes in, is there going to be a big drop-off or not as much? We'll find out, obviously, in due time.
Quick question. Are we including cheetahs in this linebacker conversation?
I think Cole Sullivan gets included. It's kind of a nuance. I don't know. Kind of.
I think for the sake of, like, positionality, like, yeah. Because, you know, Wes Goodwin is the outside linebacker's coach. They kind of cheat. Sure. They treat the cheetah position as the linebacker, even though it's kind
of tough. Because I would say Cole Sullivan, like, yeah, no, like, he definitely. But then Reggie Powers is like, I would almost consider him in the safety conversation. But it's, you know, however you see fit.
Okay. Well, in my assessment, I'm going to include the cheetahs here, just because Cole Sullivan is part of that equation too. Again, you feel real good about that top line, and if you're including Reggie Powers there as, you know, your third starting linebacker, like, again, we've heard some great things about him in fall camp, and we'll get to that a little bit after this. But I think you feel really good about this group, not just because, you know, you get that extra year from Owen Heinicke, which is obviously huge, because, you know, that was a big question mark pretty much until like the 2 days before the spring game. Mm-hmm. Kip Lewis decides to come back for another year after leading the team in tackles. So you bring back your two leading tacklers from last season. You know, one of which was one of your breakout stars in Owen Heinicke. You get a really good transfer linebacker in Cole Sullivan, who was coming on really strong at Michigan last year. You know, I think he led them with 3 interceptions. You know, just a big, versatile body who can kind of do a lot of different things. And we're seeing that now with him seeing some time at the cheetah spot. He's still going to play a lot of inside linebacker, but he has that versatility to give them some flexibility with what they do. And, you know, you effectively have 3 starters at that position because until Owen Heinicke got that extra year, Cole Sullivan was your starting Mike linebacker throughout the spring. And he effectively lost his job when Owen got that extra year, but, you know, took it in stride and, you know, talked to the coaches about what his role is going to look like. And they're basically like, your playing time isn't going to really change. How they use him will change, but he's still going to be on the field a ton. And then, you know, Reggie Powers coming in and stepping in for, you know, taking over that role from Kendall Daniels, who was just electric in that position last year. And obviously Reggie's, you know, made a lot of good plays through his first 2 years and is really kind of coming into his own at that cheetah spot. I think you feel great about that linebacker core right there. Now, I still think you need one of those young guys to be able to step in, and, you know, I don't think they're going to play like an, you know, outsized number of snaps, but I think you need a fourth guy that can step in and just provide a little bit of support, whether that's a James Nesta or a Marcus James. I'm really curious to see which one it ends up being there.
Yeah, it feels like probably James Nesta, who does look great on the practice field. That's a guy, too, kind of going back to the C.J. Nixon conversation. Remember, Nesta was a baseball guy. Yep. Tried to play both at first with a pitcher, and he has committed to football full time. And you can tell, like, the impact it's having on his body. I mean, he looks like a big dude. He's put on a lot of mass. It does feel like Marcus James is close. It feels like probably, I think Brody and I might have talked about this a couple weeks ago. It feels like Marcus James probably is like that play a lot on special teams guy and like kind of earn his way to having a big role next year sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. But maybe not. I mean, we'll find out, obviously. But you're right. I mean, you're going to need one of them to deliver and be that fourth guy. But you feel amazing about – I mean, Kip and Heinicke, and they've both been around a long time. You know, Kip has been here for the entire Venables era. You know, and he's talked about how far it's come. You know, his interview, whenever that was, you know, last week sometime, was great. You know, he has really come a long way in terms of just being very comfortable in front of us, you know, taking questions and that sort of thing. But also just, you know, he was – whenever he came to OU, he was – kind of skinny, and people didn't really know, like, is this guy going to be eventually an SEC linebacker? And, like, obviously now he's incredible. He's a huge part of what Oklahoma does, and it just that energizer bunny. He's the heartbeat of the defense in a lot of ways. And so it's fun to have him back another year because, I mean, you remember, Tom, when they got him back for 2025, it was a big deal. That was, like, a big win to get Kip back for last season. So to get him back again – definitely significant. I think the fact that he's just a smidge undersized, he's not as athletic as it seems. If you just watch the games, you would think like he's everywhere. his testing numbers aren't going to blow you away. And so I think that's what kept him from jumping to the NFL, you know, this season. But I have a feeling that he'll have an NFL career in front of him because he's just too good of a football player. And he just, you know, has the instincts and all that sort of thing. And so you feel like he's going to have a huge year. Having Heineke is obviously huge. And then, yeah, Cole Sullivan's been one of the talks of fall camp. So I think a lot to be excited about here at linebacker. Second year for Nate Dreiling as well. So,
yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like, Kip committed to this team when, you know, Lincoln Riley was still the coach.
Yep.
I'm trying to think what other fifth-year guys have been around, like, their whole career at this point.
And I think he's the only one from the 22 class.
I think he's the last one. But, yeah, it's just kind of crazy how that worked out. And, you know, before fall camp, I was talking to Nate Dreiling, and, you know, we were talking about how, you know, what kind of Kip's decision to come back. And he was talking about kind of like what you said, you know, he's a little bit undersized, like not like immensely undersized, but he's, you know, maybe an inch and a half shorter than, you know, your average NFL inside linebacker. But, you know, still needs to put on a little bit of weight. And, you know, he put on, you know, maybe 5 pounds this offseason, you know, not a terrible amount. But, you know, Nate Dreiling was just talking about how, like, how intentional he was in wanting to look, get his body to look more like not just an NFL linebacker, but an elite NFL linebacker. And he worked with James Dobson and the rest of the strength staff, really focusing on that aspect so that he is a better position for his final season at Oklahoma, but B, you know, positioning himself for a chance to have an NFL career after this. So I'm really interested to see what this, you know, final form of Kip Lewis at Oklahoma looks like this year. Cause I think he's going to be in for a big season. I mean, he's had three straight seasons of 65 plus tackles, I believe. Yeah, last year he led the team with 76 tackles. Like you said, he's just kind of everywhere. Once the game turns on, it's very interesting talking to him off the field compared to what we see on the field. Just a very interesting dichotomy of player and person there. That's really fascinating to me. But yeah, man, I'm really eager to see what Kip can do this year alongside Owen, and then obviously Cole rotating in there as well.
Yeah, no, Kip, he's a lunatic on the field, and I mean that in a very positive way. It's burning my brain forever in Knoxville. The lights are all orange and the crowd is going nuts and OU's in a huddle talking about whatever, you know, and Kip is running around on the field, like just in the middle of the field. No one's out there. He's a maniac. And I mean that in a totally positive way. Yeah. I did double check 2022 class. He is the only one left. There were guys that were still around last year.
Right.
Panic, Gentry Williams, RSJ, Javonte Barnes, R. Mason, but Kobe McKenzie, but he is the, last one still on the team. So after this year, he'll be the only one to have been on the team for all five of Brent Venables' seasons.
And to your point about the Tennessee thing, I think it was Alabama too. He was getting pretty hyped up when they were playing Dixieland Delight between the third and fourth quarters. I know before the playoff game, you know, he was like jawing at Alabama players, and yeah, you know, he didn't have to get pulled away, but like coaches were keeping a close eye on him, and like the officials had like kind of a, you know, they were kind of the barrier between the teams as they were coming on and off the field. But yeah, it's just I think it was, who was it that said it? It was Owen. He was like, yeah, like he's like a Star Wars nerd off the field, and then he's like a serial killer on it. It's like you would never expect that from Kip.
I don't know if anyone has as much fun. I think everyone has fun. A college bowl is fun. They all enjoy it. That's why they do it. But he is just from walking on the field pregame barefoot every week. You know, he's one of one. One of my favorite players I've really ever covered from like just watching on game day. It's a blast. So without further ado, let's rate the linebackers. I'll start it. This is hard. I'm gonna go in between D tackle and defensive end with a 9.25. Love the top line. I mean, it's you know, Kip and Heineke, you feel you're just, there's no concern there at all with what those guys are going to give you. You love the addition of Cole Sullivan when you loop him in that cheetah combo. Feel really good about James Nesta, what he's kind of done. It is a little thin-ish. I mean, you have a couple injuries, it can get kind of dicey, but that's, you know, mostly true of a lot of spots, right? So I really like the linebacker room. Kip and Heineke, both, you know, veteran dudes who had great years last year, are back, and just that's kind of two of the leaders of your team, you know. So I feel pretty confident linebacker wise. Feel like Oklahoma's in a good spot. A lot to be excited about with the future there as well. The young talent. I'll go 9.25 for linebacker for me.
This might sound a little bit crazy, but again, this is because I'm looping in the Cheetahs too.
Sure.
I might give this a 10.
Whoa.
Like I might feel best about like what they have at linebacker out of like any position group. You know, just because you still want a fourth guy to be able to step up. And again, like what that share of the snap count looks like, I need to like go back and look like what that's been like the last few seasons, but they've really had like a core three that they've rotated at those inside spots, you know, and last year, you know, Owen really came on, but he took over when, you know, Kobe missed some time. And then, you know, Sammy kind of was that fourth guy that was kind of, I don't want to say sporadic playing time, but it fluctuated in terms of how many snaps he played each game. But I just think with, you know, bringing back again, Kip and Owen, who were your two leading tacklers last year, you know, all SEC type guys, guys that are, you know, if they stay healthy are going to be, you know, in the conversation for the Butkus Award. And then just everything we've heard and seen from Cole Sullivan since he got to Oklahoma, right. Like his stock has just been rising, rising, rising. And to be able to get him on the field in different ways and give them that big cheetah that they're, you know, losing with Kendall Daniels off to the NFL. And then again, you know, Reggie Power is just a guy who I think is really coming into his own in that role as well. And I just feel really confident with what they have there.
How about that? I didn't know if we were going to get a 10. I don't think I'm going to give one. I like it, though. I appreciate the boldness. So a 10 for Tom. So that'll be his top position unless he has another 10. So we'll have to find out next week. We'll do secondary next week. Both positions are in a great spot, especially corner. I think my corner number might be pretty high. We'll get into that next week. Obviously, as we wrap it up with corners and safeties, and the week after that will be the first game week. Pretty crazy. We're that close. Very exciting. So let's get into some fall camp stuff. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast will be back after this short break. Had the first scrimmage on Saturday. There's a ton of notes on the website. Subscribe. There's a promo code. It's on the screen right there in the corner. Sooners 60. Brody did a great job putting together a bunch of notes from the scrimmages. We'll get into some of it, but obviously not anywhere near all of it. But Tom, let's dive into some of the things coming out of the scrimmage of note. Let's go ahead and rip the Band-Aid off at the top with kind of the injury situation. I'm sure most of you fans are very aware by now that Jake Michaela did get hurt in the scrimmage. You know, we're not going to get too in the weeds with, like, severity or how long he's going to be out because the truth is we just don't know, right? I mean, we've heard things. I think that we have a pretty firm grasp on what kind of a timeline we're looking at here. But, again, we're not doctors. We don't know for sure, so we don't want to mislead anyone or anything, but does sound like he's going to be out right for a little bit of time, probably going to miss, you know, multiple games. Again, maybe not, hopefully not, but that's the way it sounds right now. Tom, obviously not good. You know, Jake is a guy that we've talked about is kind of, you know, I mean, at center, that's an important position. Jim Nagy has raved about his NFL potential. You know, he's had a great off season after coming in really late last year. And we also have been kind of talked about like, not a very clear backup center, and now you're going to need someone to step up at backup center. You have a bunch of options. Noah Best, the freshman, has had a great offseason. You brought in a Caleb Nitta for this like exact situation, seemingly. Where are you at panic meter if Jake Michaela is, in fact, out for an extended period that Oklahoma can weather this? Because, look, I mean they got to go to Ann Arbor in week two, right? I mean, yeah. So you're diving right into this thing. How are you feeling Oklahoma's chances to be okay here, or are you worried if Jake does in fact have to miss some, you know, serious time?
I mean, I think anytime you lose a starter on the offensive line, there has to be some concern.
Good.
He's a guy who started 10 games for you last year, obviously missed the last two with that infection, lost a lot of weight, but then put it back on, but, you know, added more weight this offseason and got into a really good position with where they felt like he was going into this season. You talked about it. Jim Nagy was, you know, kind of bragging on, you know, him being overlooked and, you know, his NFL potential. He's a guy who made the Remington preseason watch list. So, you know, losing him is tough. The center position might be the toughest one to lose. And it feels like it's, you know, kind of been a recurring issue for Oklahoma in recent years. Obviously, you know, Troy Everett got hurt last year. He got hurt the year before that too. You know, again, we'll see what the severity is and how long it's going to keep him out. But I think there has to be some concern just because like you said, there's not really a clear cut backup right now, and I'm really interested to see where they decide to go with this. Because we know in the scrimmage that Caleb Nita, you know, took over with the first team unit, but was that in part because they were also without Michael Fasusi and Heath Ozaida, which meant Ryan Foje was over at left tackle and Noah Best was at right guard. When everybody else is healthy, do you feel like, you know, Noah Best might be your best option at center because, you know, everybody's been raving about him this fall camp. He obviously worked at center a lot in the spring. You know, and his long-term projection might be at center as well. You know, Brian Foje said last week that, you know, he's comfortable, you know, he can play all five spots if he needs to. Like, is he the type of guy just as a little bit more, you know, he's a sophomore, but a little bit more of a veteran who can maybe lead that line from the center spot. Like, do you want to shift him inside and have him snapping to John Mathier? Or again, like, this is kind of why you got a Caleb Nita, a guy who started nine games at Western Kentucky last year, an offense that is, you know, similar to what Ben Arbuckle does, because Ben Arbuckle also came from Western Kentucky before he was at Washington State. So there is some, you know, shared DNA there and like what he knows about the offense. I'm just kind of interested to see like where he's kind of at. Obviously, you know, he's participating and, you know, getting plugged in there with the starters, but he's a guy that was held out in the spring with an injury too. And it took some time for him to get back. So he doesn't have as many reps, you know, in this offense right now as some of these other guys. So I'm just really interested to see which way they go, or like, does a Heath Ozaida get a look there too? Just cause he's kind of been a versatile piece on the interior spots there too. So I don't know. Like, I feel like they have options. I just don't know which direction they're going to go and like how that's going to, you know, what kind of ripple effect that has with the rest of the rotation.
Yeah, no, I agree. You do have a few weeks still until you play UTEP, you know, and so I do wonder, you know, it does seem like Best or Nita are probably your most likely options. But like you said, do you get funky with a Foje or an Ozaida? Can those guys handle it? And you just kind of go with a more of like a best five attitude, because best five would be either Foje or Ozaida doing it. You know, but can they do it? I don't know. Right. You know, I mean, that's kind of the question. So last year, Papeci stepped up and kind of did it when he hadn't had a lot of center experience, and it
worked out high school.
Yeah, it worked out pretty good. And so, can you get away with that? And again, it's not like it's the week of a game. You do have a few weeks here, so it's going to be interesting. It's certainly not ideal, right? I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You know, I mean, it's not great. I don't think it's, you know, season ending by any means, both the injury or for Oklahoma's sake to have him out. But, you know, it's certainly a wrinkle and a hurdle that you didn't want to have to deal with. So we'll see. Like you said, Fasusi and Ozaida were both out for the scrimmage. Expect both guys to be good to go by the time the season rolls around, but both were out for the scrimmage. And so you had kind of a hodgepodge offensive line. You noted it, but just for housekeeping, Foje, EPL, Nita was your center, Best at right guard, and then Amarian Harris. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what it looks like. With that in mind, the defense did seem to win the day from what we were told. And again, I think most people understand this, but these scrimmages are not open to the public. We did not watch the scrimmage. They're not open to media. This is all sourced info to Sooners Illustrated. Again, full notes are on the website. But does sound like, from what we were told, defense won the day, which, again, you're missing, you know, three starting offensive linemen against that defensive front. Probably not a shock that the defense won the day. It's a top five defense in the country probably this season. In particular, Reggie Powers, Tom, it's not like he had a massive day. Brody Lusk reporting that he had three sacks in the game. Really exciting. You know, I feel like Reggie, and we just kind of touched on him a little bit there, and that when we got into the Cheetahs for a moment during the linebacker preview, but Reggie's been a guy who we haven't talked about a lot in the offseason because he's kind of a known both commodity and also like what his role is. Like, it's pretty clear. But sounds like he's had a great offseason, having a really good camp, probably poised for a big, big year. But big scrimmage for him, and it sounds like this OU defense is playing well with a lot to be excited about right now, really at every level right now. Guys are stepping up, which is exciting.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to see how creative they get with Reggie in that Cheetah spot as the, you know, as the projected starter there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. You go back a couple years when, I guess it was 2024, when Kendall Dolby was really finding his footing in that Cheetah role.
Yeah.
Brent loved to blitz him from the slot, and he was really effective in there when they did send him. And I think Reggie can have that same kind of impact, and I think we're seeing that and hearing that so far in what he's been able to do in some of these game-like situations in fall camp. But yeah, I think he's in for another, you know, really solid year as a junior. Yeah.
You know, 100%. It does feel like he's put together. And we talked to him right at the beginning of fall camp, you know, after practice. And, you know, he has a very good understanding of what his role is and what he needs to do. So a lot to be excited about there with Reggie Powers. He was kind of the MVP of the day, it sounded like, on Saturday. Offensively, there were some good things. I know the offensive line, we said the defense won the day, offensive line kind of beat up. But there were some positive developments, especially on the health front. I know a lot of focus on Michael right now in the offensive line, but Jonathan Hatton, a full go, which is exciting, you know, because we talked about last week, mild concussion, wasn't practicing for a little while, but obviously must not have been that, he must have bounced back pretty quick, because, I mean, to be back out there playing in a scrimmage is a big deal. And, you know, we talked about at the beginning of camp, whenever Torrey Blaylock goes down, felt like that really opened the door for Hatton, and then it was like, oh no, now he's banged up, but he was back out there. He played really well, it sounds like, had a longer running touchdown in the game, which is exciting. And Trill Harris was out there, which is a big sigh really for OU fans. You know, after the early, you know, indication that he might not be ready for the start of camp, and it was like, oh God, he was out there. You know, OU football put out the clip this morning of a sick one-handed catch in the corner of the end zone over Eli Bowen, who was all over him, which is a great catch over you know, good coverage. You got to feel good if you're an OU fan. You're worried about the offensive line a little bit, I think, right now, and Michael being hurt makes you queasy. But to read that X-Rob is healthy and playing well, and that Jonathan Hatton is out there making some things happen, and that Trell Harris is healthy, those are really positive and exciting developments, I think. When you're trying to look at the skill positions being better, that'll make you feel pretty good about where you're at offensively if you're Oklahoma right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll start with the running back. Obviously, getting X-Rob, you know, up to speed early in camp was mm-hmm. huge. Sounds like he's really – you know, coming along and kind of picking up, making some big plays.
I think he's probably running back one when the opener rolls around, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I think I lean that way right now, too. I still think Lloyd Avant, just because of the consistency that he showed. Like, he might not have, like, the big play explosiveness that a Xavier Robinson or Jonathan Hatton has, but he's just done everything really well so far, you know, whether that's pass protection, whether that's, you know, getting some good chunk plays or, you know, catching the ball out of the backfield. I think they really like what he's able to do. And I'm pretty confident he's going to have a role on this offense, but I don't think that he's going to be running back one at this moment right now, even though he kind of entered camp in that spot. But Jonathan Hatton, I think he's going to have something to say about all this. Like, if he can keep it rolling, like you said, it really positive just the fact that he was back out there. I thought it was pretty encouraging that when we were out there on Tuesday, you know, a day after he got this concussion, that he was still out there, you know, off to the side, you know, like going through stretches and stuff. But, you know, when you have a concussion, you can get, you know, light sensitivity, and it mm-hmm. can be tough to just be out in the sunlight like that. So the fact that he was out there with the team and you know, limited or, you know, off to the side or whatever, I just felt was, you know, pretty encouraging about his, you know, how long he might be out. But it sure. sounds like he made some really good plays in the scrimmage. Like you said, I think he had a long touchdown with the second team offense, I believe it was. But still, he's just shown that he's a playmaker. I mean, he's what, 235 now on the roster, and he's
great.
One of the fastest guys on the team. That's a good combination to have. And then, you know, shifting over to Trell Harris, the fact that he's been ramping up and is now like 100% full go is huge. Right. Again, he was an all ACC receiver last year, led Virginia in receiving, you know, look, Virginia won 11 games last year. They played for an ACC title. So to have that kind of experience and production back, and he's very clearly building a rapport with John Matera at this point. You know, Brent Venables went out of his way to brag on him. It's like, yeah, when we spoke to him Friday, 7-on-7, he got behind the defense and, you know, had a nice catch in the end zone over, I think it was Eli Bowen again. just to make a big play, like to have more playmakers and guys that can stretch the field. And when we talked to Emmett Jones before the season, he's just like, yeah, he's just like a pure receiver. He does a lot of different things really well, and you need that as a nice complementary piece to, you know, what you have in Isaiah Satania and what you're bringing in Parker Livingstone, and you know, some of these other young guys that you're going to be counting on. I think it's huge to have a veteran presence with the kind of production that Trell Harris has been able to have.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. Really positive element, because I mean, we talked about it. Like, there's been a lot of really good returns on these young wide receivers. Elijah Thomas has had a great camp. Even Jasir Rogers. And Isaiah Satania looks phenomenal. I mean, he's having a great camp. I think there's a lot of belief that that guy's going to have another huge year. And after Parker Livingstone things, I mean, but Trell is one of those guys. I mean, he can be an all-SEC wide receiver if it all comes together and he has the year he's capable of having. And so that's a big deal to have him up and running. And it sounds like it's a full go right now, and he had a good scrimmage. And so a lot to really be excited about there. And I'm with you on Hatton as well. Like, it just – feels like he's going to be on the field in some capacity. And so it's going to be fun to watch that develop. They should have another scrimmage before camp is done. So we'll see how it looks that time around. And hopefully offensive line a little healthier for that one. Again, don't think Fasusi knows Zyda anything real serious. You're going to be cautious, obviously, with those guys. But we'll see how things go moving forward. We'll have more fall camp stuff. There's obviously fall camp stuff every single day over the website. Brody and I are going to do a podcast later in the week. We're going to get back on a 2-show-a-week schedule. The rest of the way, obviously going into the season. Brody and I will get into some more fall camp stuff later in the week on Thursday. So keep an eye out for that. But good stuff, obviously. And we'll be back out on the practice field tomorrow, talk to more players after practice tomorrow afternoon. So keep an eye out for that as we get closer, 18 days away from kickoff. That in mind, one last housekeeping item on football, and then we'll hit a little bit of hoops on the way out. Taking the preseason poll today. The annual, I mean, put whatever stock you want if you want. I mean, some people care about it, some people don't. You know, there's a lot of opinions on preseason rankings, whatever. We got it today. Oklahoma number 10 in the AP poll. Tom, you know, I can't figure out. You know, we talked about it at media days. It seemed like there was a lot of buzz about Oklahoma being like a national title contender, and we were thinking, man, they're always getting a lot of love. And the preseason poll came out, and they were 7th, which is kind of low. And now the AP poll comes out in their 10th, which is still 5th in the SEC. But 10, I mean, obviously, you know, that's projected as a playoff team, right? I mean, obviously, number 10 in the AP poll. A lot to be excited about, obviously, for Oklahoma. What did you think of where they landed? Anything else stick out to you from the poll in general that came out this morning?
Yeah, like top 10-ish range, like sounds –
it's about
seems right. Yeah, about like it wouldn't have surprised me to see them as high as like 8th or 9th. But this is the highest that they've been ranked going into the season since Brent's first year in 2022. Obviously, that year did not go as planned, but I think the program is in a much healthier spot now, just in terms of continuity and, you know, talent of what, you know, what they've been able to recruit and what they've been able to develop and retain over these last couple of years. So I think they're in a much better spot to build off of, you know, the success that they had last year, 10-win season, playoff berth. 10 feels right. It's going to be hard. You know, they play 6 teams that are ranked in the top 25.
Yeah.
4 of them, I believe, in the top 10, Georgia, Texas, Texas A&M, and Ole Miss.
Yeah.
That's a lot, man. And then you look at week 2, you have number 16, Michigan, on the road. It's going to be tough sledding, but, you know, they're going to earn whatever they get this year, no doubt about it, with that schedule.
Did you say 6 or 7? Right, yeah, I think it's 7 if I'm counting right. It's pretty crazy. You have Georgia 3, Texas
Georgia,
5,
Texas, Ole Miss, and Texas A&M,
Ole Miss 9, Alabama. Missouri. Oh, yeah, they don't play Alabama.
No Alabama. Yeah, okay,
that's where I was mixing up. Because you got Michigan,
Missouri, 6, and Michigan.
Yeah, the Missouri 25. I was counting Alabama for some reason. They're not on schedule.
It's, I mean, they played them like 3 times in a calendar year.
Yeah,
so
assume they're on there. Yeah, no, it's nuts. I mean, 4 teams in the top 10. Because that, I mean, that's really one of the things that stuck out. It was like, geez, Georgia, play them, they're 3. Texas at 5, which is actually a little lower than I thought. I thought Texas was going to be more like, not that 5 is low, but I thought they might be in the top, you know, 2-3 range. But you got both them and Ole Miss. It's not that, nothing we didn't already know. It's a daunting schedule in the preseason. Look, the preseason poll is preseason poll. I mean, last year there were teams that were in the top 10 that had horrible years. Your Penn States, the world last year. Remember, they were really high. Clemson, I mean, it will happen again, I'm sure. There'll be a couple teams out here that at the end of the year we'll look back and be like, whoa, that we were way off on that. But yeah, it feels about right. And it is actually not the highest preseason ranking they've had under Brent Venables. They were 9 his first year.
His first year.
Which obviously hopefully this year goes a lot better than that one. And they opened that year also against UTEP, kind of coincidentally. So we'll see. But they've been kind of, I mean, it just kind of shows you where the public perception is. I mean, because they've been kind of hanging around those low teens into like 20 range the last few years. And this year all the way up into the top 10 start the year. So doesn't really mean anything, obviously, but kind of a little bit of a respect, sign of respect there. So 10 to start. And assuming Michigan doesn't get upset, or OU should have at least a top 16 matchup and maybe a top 15 matchup whenever OU goes up to Ann Arbor in week 2, which is exciting.
That's not the way.
Not the way. It's crazy. If you're getting excited. All right, before we get out of here, a little bit of hoops on the back end. Yeah, let's try hoops in August because Oklahoma's on the board in the 5-for-5 market. We've been talking about this last few weeks that they were going to add to their roster, and they still are. They still have more spots, and they're going to add more. But they made a big splash last week, Tom, with B.J. Edwards, SMU guard, comes in. You know, last season, I got his numbers here in front of me. Pretty good year. I mean, he averaged almost 13 points a game last year, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, can play some defense for you. I mean, first off, why not? I mean, the Oklahoma has the money to do this and the roster spots to do this because they had, and Brody's talked about it, like they had some leftover dollars and they had spots open to take advantage of the 5-for-5 market. And that's what they're able to do with Edwards here. I mean, Xavier Brown, Pop Isaacs, Dayton Forsyth, B.J. Edwards, that's a pretty good guard group to me. What do you think of the addition of Edwards? And I mean, obviously, he's going to play, right? He's going to play and probably play pretty good minutes, I would think, whenever the season rolls around here in about 2.5 months.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's starting alongside Xavier Brown.
He could. He definitely could.
I mean, he's really productive for an ACC program, all ACC. If I remember correctly, he was all ACC defensive team one of the last 2 years. I can't remember off the top of my head, but a really good two-way player that I think would be real good complementary piece alongside Xavier Brown. And if his name sounds familiar, if you're an Oklahoma fan,
yeah,
that's because it's funny how the script writers really in their bag, it seems.
I know.
He's the player that was injured at the end of the season for SMU, and they kind of fudged his status.
Yeah, they lied.
they lied about his availability for the NCAA tournament, and that got them into the field and left Oklahoma as the first team out. And now it kind of comes full circle, and he joins Oklahoma. I'm sure neither him nor Porter are going to want to talk about that.
But I was going to say, how can we word a question to get to ask about that? Porter might bite. He's pretty good about that sort of thing.
Yeah. But it is just funny how things kind of work out in the big picture after all. But I think he's a really exciting add for this team, especially when you consider the juncture of the calendar that they're getting him. I think it'll take a little bit of time, obviously, for him to mesh with the rest of the team, get in there more in the system. But they still have a couple months before the season gets underway, so he's going to hit the ground running, and I think it's a really good add that elevates what this team's capable of.
Yeah, I agree. I like this guard group. It feels like it's going to be a pretty decent roster, and like I said, they got a couple more spots to play with. They're going to add more. Brody's been all over it. He was all over the B.J. Edwards. If you were a subscriber, you knew OU was in a really good spot for Edwards for a while, a couple of weeks, and finally got that thing done officially last week, and he is signed. So that's all done and taken care of. So he'll be on this team, and it's exciting. It is funny, like you said, that was what kept them out. The committee went on record saying, like, him returning was a big factor. They were the last team in, OU was the first team out, and now he's on OU. So kind of funny the way that works out. But definitely a fun portal ad, and again, probably more to come, and we'll continue to monitor it, and might even get into that a little bit with Brody on the Thursday show. Because there's more to be done here, more spots, and OU has more resources available to them, and the 5-for-5 market being pretty good to OU right now. And so subscribe and keep up with it every day, as Brody, again, been all over it. Nobody like him in the market. So good stuff there. So OU gets B.J. Edwards in from SMU. All right, I think that's it. Had a lot to get through. I think we did it in a fairly timely manner, a little bit of a longer show, but not too bad. We'll be back again with Brody on Thursday. Going to be back on the two shows a week schedule the rest of the way. We got kind of wonky the last few weeks just with like fall camp and July was really slow. So it just kind of didn't have a lot of need for it. But we're back into a regular rhythm now. Again, we'll be back on the practice field tomorrow to talk to more players tomorrow, Tuesday. Same thing on Friday. So keep an eye out for that on both days as we'll get more updates from the team. And again, subscribe. Use that promo code on the screen. Be with us every day, because the content is flowing. We've had a lot of new signups lately, so it's exciting, and we're excited. We feel like it's going to be an awesome season, so be with us every single day over there as soon as Illustrated. So that's it for now. For Tom Green, I'm Josh Callaway. We'll see you next time right back here Thursday, as always, on Sooners Illustrated.